Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Laura, who is here to speak with us about a recent Practice Corner article she wrote for the newsletter. Welcome, Laura.
Hey, Jen.
Hey.
Hello.
So I found, in your article, you were speaking about something that you worked on with an awareness coach some time back. And I just thought, not only was it inspiring, but really, really helpful in terms of what you saw as you worked with that, kind of what you got to, the bamboozles you knew were going to be ahead of you, and how you thwarted those and how you've been working with it. So I was hoping you might kind of walk us through that.
Sure. So as you said, I had been working with a Zen awareness coach about the process around kind of getting tense and driven during work. And towards the end of the package, you know, I'd sort of had all these insights about, kind of the lies that conditioning tells and sort of how it pulls me into that place and all that. And so my coach was encouraging me to put that on a poster and, you know, look at it every day and sort of just really have it in my awareness in that way.
So the kind of, in that format that you were saying of, you know, what conditioning says is such and such, but what's really true is, and to have that on a poster in the front of your awareness.
Exactly, yeah. And like the sort of the exact language that you use, like for me, it's like, you know, oh, it'll feel so good if you just do this a little more, you know, some of those phrases that I kind of hear over and over again. And then like you say, sort of, and then what's really true.
If I may just underline that right there is so helpful, Laura, is to really get the specific language, because then that really ups your chances, doesn't it, of, wait a minute, that's actually going on right now. I'm hearing that. That's a very familiar message. So instead of being conditioning, training us to believe it, we're training ourselves to hear it, be aware of it.
Yeah, and I think it was actually something that my coach had said was like, I think she was like, you know, put on a poster and then, you know, in a couple of weeks when conditioning is trying to convince you to take it down, you know, that's the practice, is to, you know, not do that. And I think that just sort of kind of got me thinking like, okay, how can I, because I mean, you know, I've made my share of posters over the years. And I've seen, you know, kind of the process around, you know, just that it can be challenging to sort of keep, to sort of keep it fresh and to keep coming back to it and all of that. And so what dropped in was, instead of actually putting it up on the wall, was to just keep it on my desk and to just record it every morning before I started work.
One of my favorite parts, Laura, was what you said of, and it's big, and it's not just on my desk. Did you say keyboard or something where you can't get to your work without running into that poster?
It takes up my whole desk. I mean, I will admit, sometimes I like found myself, you know, an hour into work, I'm sort of like pretzel, like kind of trying to like
underneath,
type around it, but it's pretty big. So what I said in the blog is that, or what I was seeing was just that, because it's the physical presence of the poster there, it's a really good reminder to record and listen every morning. And then, so it's sort of the two things reinforce each other, because the poster is there, so it's like, okay, I'm going to record and listen, and it doesn't take long because it's there's not a lot on the poster. And then and sometimes I'll just read it, and sometimes, you know, there's other things I'll be seeing that morning or that kind of thing around the process. But then because I'm recording it every morning, it keeps what's on the poster fresh. It keeps it in my awareness.
I absolutely, every single morning you're recording what's on that poster into your recorder. It's brilliant. And so some days it sounds like, you know, oh yeah. And you know what I'm seeing about that, what I've been seeing, you know, I had this insight about it. And other days you just keep that commitment of recording what's on the poster and go on. Such broad application.
Yeah. And I think it's been helpful because I think this year I've found, I think my recording and listening practice has kind of gone through bigger fluctuations than I've experienced in the past, or it's particularly with, having less structure, particularly on my work day or anything like that. I don't leave the house. So it's just having, having something physical like that, I think was really helpful for me in just that reminder, because I've, to kind of keep up that practice.
Yeah. Or again, so it's that place of realizing where are the places that I'm vulnerable to the voices and where is it going to come in, and where it sounds like, where does it come in? So realizing, there have been some fluctuations in recording and listening, and that part of that feels like it's this big change in routine that we've all had in the last, 18 months, whatever it's been. And so it sounds like that's a piece of where these insights of how to support yourself came in, is, okay, well, I need to up my game here. So here are some ways I can really do that.
Right, because I'm realizing as you're talking that, before, sort of one of my sort of bedrock recording and listening times was on my way to work, as I'm on, that was the time when I would record and listen, and the commute went away. And so, and so then I wasn't doing it. And so, like you say, this was a, I hadn't really seen it till now, but this was a kind of a way that's helped me to kind of bring that kind of thing back in.
Yeah, exactly. This is your commute, sitting down in the chair there.
Yeah.
And so putting that, because it's so true, in terms of when we want to establish supports for ourselves, to have something like that. Okay, well, yeah, I have this time in my day where I'm commuting. Perfect. That's a great time to record and listen. And then that goes away, and it can take us a while to wake up to, okay, yeah, but that doesn't mean recording and listening have to go away. That's what conditioning likes to do. But then you realize, okay, well, then we just switch it around. What's the support that fits now?
Yeah, and I'm just seeing as we're talking that, because it was very discombobulating when sort of my regular routine went away, and then how do I incorporate recording and listening, and it's like it took time, this structure came in 5-6 months into working from home, but it's like just that trust that if you're there showing up, things will start dropping in, and you just kind of start finding things that work.
That's such a good point, and again, broad application. So things get suddenly all changed, and to have that trust and patience with ourselves of, okay, well, this is gonna need some transition here, and we don't necessarily have clarity right out of the gate of what that's gonna be, and so we let that, we try this, we try that, we experiment with different ways of supporting ourselves, and then we find things like this, or someone reads your article. Oh, I'm going to try that, or people talk about on the morning show. Oh, an hourly timer. I'm going to do that. All the things that as Sangha we get from each other, try out, and then, over time they really come in as supports for us.
Yeah, definitely.
So it's such a good way to continue to support ourselves because this year, as we've said so many times, this year was a year of, wow, it's really obvious that things are changing. And I think one of the things we've all talked about is, but when I realize it, things are always changing all the time. And so what a great thing to bring to always being, I think that's what you started with, how easily things turn into the wallpaper, metaphorically or literally. We no longer see them. We forget about, oh yeah, what happened to that practice that I used to do of the, and so to have ways to support ourselves, to keep it fresh, as you say, and to keep it at the front of our awareness.
Yeah. And it's helpful just, I think, talking about the process, because it's kind of in any given moment when I realize this thing has fallen away, or how do I adjust to this new thing that's kind of, I'm more resistance is showing up for me around a practice or that kind of thing. It can feel very big and impossible. And so just to have that larger context of no, there's been many changes, and if I'm patient with it and just keep looking, you know, yeah. song will drop in yeah. inside, so there'll be other, you know, things will come in
yeah.
and yeah. Kind of a door will open.
That's right. Right. Mm-hmm. And then, and when we have successes, I project like you're describing, we refer to those. You know, it's just like that time when I made the poster and I put it on my desk mm-hmm. and I, it's just another one of those. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's great. Well, thanks so much, Laura, for being with us this afternoon to talk about it and for writing about it in the newsletter.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Take care. Good night.
Bye. Thanks.
And Michael, we'll turn the show over to you and Ashwini.
Wonderful. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Laura. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air. And good afternoon, Ashwini.
Hey, Michael.
Hi there.
I'm muted.
No problem. Hi. I enjoyed that conversation, and especially the part about taking time to see, you know, there was the big shift a year ago of the schedule, and then seeing, okay, things are changing, and it may take me a while to adjust, and I bring a lot of willingness, and I will, you know, adjust and find the practices that I need to support me, and I'll keep showing up.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I love that line that just because things change, circumstances change, or routines change, or schedules change, we don't stop practicing. Practice also changes, right?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's just such a kindness to ourselves, right, Michael, if we basically acknowledge that change happens, and when and we're training to be present to that change, but that does not mean that there isn't an arc of transition. That we can be present through the transition as change happens too, right?
Mm. Yeah, yeah. So the transition happens and we're present to that along the way.
Yes, without the voice saying it's not the way it was, so there's something wrong, or it'll never be the way it was, and therefore I can't do something. I can't do what I was doing before, right? That
yes.
doesn't help us in the transition.
Yes. Yes, yes, those voices are never helpful, are they?
No.
And I have announcements here, unless there's something else you'd like to share.
No, go ahead.
Okay. Reflective Listening Buddies is one of our most popular programs for a reason. There is no other support quite like it for practicing presence, with participants required to show up for themselves and another every week for 30 minutes. Registration closes this Thursday, April 1st, and the new quarter starts April 15th. And what would it be like to begin the day basking in unconditional love and acceptance? Our group coaching class, Mornings with the Mentor, can get you there. The four-week virtual class is on Wednesdays starting May 5th. For those who want to access the wisdom, love, and compassion that is our authentic nature, our powerful recording and listening training course begins May 13th. This engaging six-week course includes recording and listening exercises with time in class for processing your experience. And for these and all practice offerings, visit livingcompassion.org. And the usual reminders today, if you'd like to get in the queue to talk with Ashwini, press *6 and then 1 to make Ash show. And a conversation on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes is great. Okay, Ashwini, I think we are ready to get started.
All right.
First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is April.
Hi, April.
Hi, April.
The area that I need support with is during the work week, before I even am fully awake, ego is so loud. The only way I can describe it is, you know, when you were like in elementary school and the fire alarm would go off and it would be so loud because it would bounce off of the brick walls, mm-hmm. and you just couldn't even like think. Mm-hmm. That's how loud it is for me all mm-hmm. day. And mm-hmm. it's so loud, I can't think. It's hard for me to talk to other people. It's hard interacting. It's hard doing my job. And mm-hmm. then when I leave work, it calms down. But I do record and listen in the mornings and sometimes also at lunch. And today I just thought, I have had it. I'm leaving work early. I'm getting on the radio show because I have had it with this. I'm not going to put up with this anymore. It's so loud that by the end of the day, I'm exhausted. I am so tired. I have a headache because it's been like trying to concentrate with a fire alarm going off all day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good
and
for you.
I need support on how to help me.
Mm-hmm. Well, the reason I say good for you, right, April, is because oftentimes there's a kind of sense of this is hard, this is difficult, this is challenging. I don't want it to ruin my life, and so let me do something about it, right? And it's very casual. But when we get to a place like you describe yourself getting to, which is I'm done. I don't want to suffer over this anymore, with that level of clarity. Then we actually begin a practice that we actually begin a practice because there's a willingness to do anything to stop that from happening, right? To stop that suffering. Whatever you tell me to do, I'm going to do because what I'm doing right now is not working and I'm willing to try anything. It basically puts sort of lights a fire around our willingness to go up against what's making us suffer so much, right? And that sounds like where you are.
Yes.
So tell me a little bit more about your recording and listening practice, April. How do you record and how do you, because that's the recording and listening practice is how we replace one conversation with the other, right? So if the fire alarm is going 24/7, you want to be listening to something other than the fire alarm 24/7.
Yeah. So I usually take time in the morning by myself and record how I'm feeling and what's going on. And then I switch hands and I listen to it, and then mm-hmm. the mentor speaks. Mm-hmm. And then I take that recording and listen to it a couple of times before work. And then mm-hmm. if I have a break at work, I'll put in I have cordless headphones, and I'll put it in and listen to it a couple of times. And then if it's still so bad, I might do the very same process at lunch.
Mm-hmm. And do you find that when you do that, or while you're doing that, the alarm is no longer going?
No, the alarm's still going.
So does it feel like you are paying attention to that process that you're doing with that all of your attention is on the recording and it helps? Or are you saying that even
it
while you're
help.
Doing it, that uh-huh, it does help. And how does it help for you?
Just trying to get my attention on what's the truth and uh-huh. what's really going on, even though inside it feels scary and it feels like mm-hmm. My whole body is just like shaking with anxiety. I just mm-hmm. try to focus and just listen to what's the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And listen to it over and over.
Yes, and so do you find yourself, so you record and listen, you do the two-handed recording exercise, and it sounds like that helps or provides you relief the first thing in the morning. Have you tried listening to recordings all night?
No, I haven't.
Well, that's a possibility, because what we often say is if we manage to win the battle of attention against conditioning during the day, it kind of goes underground, and so then it tortures you at night. And so if it's torturing you all night, then you wake up in the morning into it. So one way of practicing with that would be to, there's some handy dandy headphones you can get, which you can wear while you're sleeping. And you could have recordings of a whole bunch of things going on all night on repeat that basically tell you where you want your attention, tell you that there's nothing wrong. All of these two-handed recordings that you've been doing are generating the kind of information she wants to hear rather than what the voices are telling her, right? So you could listen to
yes.
your recordings all night and see if you wake up in the morning, wake up in the morning into conditioned mind. And it sounds like there's a day that it never lets up, right? The voices never let up. And so there's a way in which you're interrupting them once in a while. Is your work environment something like where you could put your earbuds on all the time or have one earbud in and you're listening to a recording that talks to you about how you want to be and how life is and what's true for you while you're going about your work? Because while you're going about your work, you're either listening to the voice or you're going to be listening to the recording. And if you're listening to the recording, it ups your odds that conditioning is not, or the voices are not controlling your experience.
Well, I'm going to try it. I never thought of doing it at night, so I'm going to definitely try that. During the day, it's a little bit hard because I'm listening to other people talk to me. Like, I'm trying to give them my attention. But like you said, I mean, it can't hurt.
Have the opportunity. And so tell me a little bit more, when you're talking to someone, are you also listening to a voice in your head telling you to be anxious or afraid? So can you wholeheartedly listen to the other person?
I guess not. I guess that's true. That is true.
Right? So it might, again, for me, this is all practice, right? We do the things that we think will assist us, and then we find out, we learn something, and we fine-tune it. So one option would be to do a test of listening to a recording, really on low voice, while you're listening to someone else, and see if it just drowns out the conditioned voice. And you can play with the recording. It could be a continuous, I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you, or just whispers of love, peace, feel peace, April, however you want to, you know?
Yeah.
And see if that could be, you know, you could have an expanded awareness practice where you could be listening to somebody and listening to a recording at the same time. And see how, so that you're not also listening to a voice in your head that's making you anxious, right? Another technique we often use is when I'm listening to somebody, in order to stay present, perhaps your job does not allow you to reflect what they say in the reflective listening technique that we use in facilitation. But there's a way in which you could potentially just reflect exactly what they said in your head, not out loud. And what that requires you to be is so present that you can't be listening to a voice and do that at the same time. Yeah, it's all worth trying, because you certainly don't want to be exhausted and tired and irritable and depressed and worn out because you're listening to something that's draining all your energy. So just a couple of different ways of practicing with it, and call back in and tell us how it's going.
Great. Yeah, I mean, I will try anything.
It's
not working the way it's going, so I can't lose anything by trying something new.
Yes, absolutely. And it's what Sherry's always said, right? If you listen to recordings for 15 minutes out of the day, the rest of the 23 hours and 45 minutes, what you're listening to is conditioning. So, you know, if you really want to not be listening to conditioning, you have to be actively listening to something else. And it's really hard when you have such loud voices to keep redirecting your attention to the breath or something like that. You really have to start with an active process of where the attention rests. And that's what you're creating with your recording. So every chance you get, you are either doing a two-handed recording exercise in order to be with the person who's having this scary experience, or you're listening to the wisdom, love, and compassion rather than listening to a hateful voice in your head.
Yeah, I love it.
Okay, well, keep us posted, April. Go home early and let us know how it's going in the next couple of weeks or even sooner.
Okay, I will. Thank you so much.
Thanks, April.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, April. And Ashwini, I went to exactly the same place that both of you went to, which is there's this precious human being and I will do anything to save this person. What I've been doing is not working and I am open to ideas and I will try anything.
Mm-hmm. Because as April says, there's nothing to lose and everything
yes.
to gain, right? Because every
yes.
minute that I'm not listening to a voice in my head, I'm training attention to having it where I want it or choose for it to be.
Yes.
You never
yes.
lose there. You're always gaining. It's like training a muscle. The more I train the muscle, the more trained it is.
Yes, yes. Wonderful.
Yeah.
And we have another caller here.
Great. Thank you, Michael.
Sure. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Yes, this is Susan from Ventura.
Hi, Susan.
Hey, Susan.
Hi. Well, it's been a while since I've called in, so I kind of feel like a show about Houston, we have a problem. Except I really don't. I just realize I start feeling not engaged and a bit disconnected and like I'm floating out in space. So I wanted to call in. And I know I'm attached, but I wanted to reattach, you know, from where
yeah.
I am. So, yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't mean that you're not practicing or you're not engaged, but there's always that sense of being grounded or connected to Sangha that we experience when we participate in certain ways. And since that's a dimension of our practice, we just keep wanting to do that, right? It's not
yeah,
that you have to call in only if there's something wrong. It's wonderful to call in and just say you're doing well. And you wanted to say hi to everybody.
Yeah, and yeah, because I would go, oh, well, you don't have anything big to talk about or you don't have anything great, you know, either side of the duality. And, you know, it's more just like, okay, here's where I'm looking at. I'm 71 now and I've had my own business for many years. And now I'm just kind of, I think it's letting me go and I'm letting it go. I'm unwilling to put out the effort in the marketing and because I don't have to keep it going. But I can feel that loss of identity of being a business person and working and succeed, you know, and it came up in, maybe it was over the holidays. We had an exercise around identity.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when I called, I think I talked to Sherry then just about now you all had gone too far. Like, this was not a bridge. I was, so I'm better with it now. Like, okay, I'm in a transition that I don't feel like I set into motion. It just feels like it's unfolding.
Mm-hmm.
But I realized that whole identity thing is powerful, particularly as I get older. Like, okay, now what? That kind I would say searching for meaning, but I don't know that that's exactly it. But
Yeah, so many what you're saying, Susan, right? Because, you know, there's always something to talk about. I mean, and most often that notion of it has to be a certain way or it has to be a certain thing is how we're shut out of talking about or looking at what is actually going on for me right now.
I mean,
and there always is something going on.
Yeah,
I'm
never not noticing. Oh, you
yes.
kind of strobed in and out, but you're back.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
So
I'm always.
Yeah, life is always happening. There's something happening in life, and there's always the ability to be aware, to notice, and to report on it. And for you, I mean, just looking right now about what you want to talk about, it's a big deal, right? You're looking at a loss
yeah.
of identity, and
yeah.
It's interesting that conditioning doesn't want you to talk about it.
Yeah, yeah. It doesn't feel, I don't feel as like, oh, about it now. I'm kind of like, okay, you know, I keep having dreams of being pregnant and giving birth. And it has that feeling like, whatever the next thing is. I've always had a plan, and I don't have a plan this time. I don't have, so I mean, kind of what saves me in the morning is sort of, what now, life?
That's right, right. Yeah.
You know,
well, and I don't know if this is your experience, but that loss mm-hmm. of identity opens up a different way of being, right? So it's not
yeah.
that the things you did were not valuable or meaningful or what life is calling you to do, but if the reference to who you are is based on what you did, then there is that sense of, well, there's nothing to reference right now because I'm not doing that, right? And it really, really brings
right.
up that points to us about the process of self-referencing, how the self or the I is maintained by referencing itself. Mm-hmm. And when that process kind of disintegrates because of a life transition like you are describing, we mm-hmm. then learn to be here for life as the reference rather than the self as the reference.
Mm-hmm.
And that
is
a very different feeling, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's what is that line about anxiety is the first taste of freedom? I think about that, like, because I've been pretty much my whole life a high achiever, but that's a doing, goal-setting, future-oriented, and I've enjoyed it, but now it's like, well, yeah, who am I and what am I about when I'm not engaged in that process anymore? So,
well, and it's a very spiritual question. It's the ultimate question in Zen, right? Because
yeah.
all of that process made you, within quotes, feel a certain
yeah.
way. So then do you stop existing because you don't feel like that anymore? You do it.
Yeah, or
right?
But it's also, I can see the whole thing about people who, and I don't think of myself as elderly by any means, of that kind of invisibility and, you know, like my kids don't really need me. They're older and on their mm-hmm. journey and finding a, I don't know. I think that's, I don't hopefully want to figure it out.
Yeah, yeah.
But
we certainly don't want to figure it out. And
exactly.
That's right. You don't want to figure it out. You acknowledge the process as a loss of identity. It's almost it letting you go. And you being
yeah.
open to life showing it, revealing itself to you in this process, rather than having to figure it out or re-engage in the same processes you were engaged in before.
Oh, you're right, and it's so tempting. Do you know what I mean? It's
yeah.
like, I now know why prisoners want to go back to prison. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
That kind of recidivism.
Yes.
I think there's an ego recidivism. And yeah, I think it's letting me go and letting it go.
Yeah,
but
such an opportunity.
I want to grasp on. Yeah, I want to grasp onto something, and there's nothing to really, except for things like what now life, or wow, I'm losing my identity, and just acknowledging the process that I feel like I got
yeah.
nothing after that, you know. So that, I like that idea of life referencing rather than self referencing.
Yeah, well, and that what you just said of the tendency to want to grasp is not I
yeah.
wanting to grasp, but ego attempting to reassert identity,
mm-hmm.
self-referencing, is moving into the vacuum, right? And so we hold
mm-hmm.
that, the space between the thoughts or the container of awareness, and get a receptivity to what it feels like when that process is not operating. Because the intuition, of course, is that's what we really are. We don't need to perform, and we don't need to be somebody or someone or ego. And so what is that quality of life and living and consciousness that we experience when that's not there? And can we let ourselves have that experience? It's a spiritual
yeah.
experience.
Yeah, it feels like, you know, people talk about the invisible world. It's like
mm-hmm.
it's like that, that there's a whole world. I mean, I have intuitions, and I've been on spiritual path my whole life that I can remember, but this is categorically different for me
mm-hmm.
than I was always yeah. more grounded in my self identity, and now I don't have it, and I don't choose it. So
it's a great opportunity.
Yeah, so that's what I'm in the middle of, and
mm-hmm. big.
I don't
big
feel
in the
yeah.
middle of. right? So this,
yeah, I'm doing a lot of walking.
Yeah, and this is where the, it's like a project, this is where the sense of wanting to reconnect comes from, right? To call into the show, because here's a group of people who are attempting to be present to that in everything they're doing in life and everything they're being in life, right? So where can you have a conversation about blessed is the knowledge of emptiness and the invisible world and receptivity to existence itself then on a radio show like this.
Right, exactly. That is, I mean, the word emptiness is what, it, you know, it's like, you know, because I associate it with loss and, you know, when you look into the darkness, it looks into all those kind of negative things. Like, I feel like one of the, I feel like one of the space movies where the person goes out and they're tethered to the mothership, but they're floating. You know, of like, I just need a communication to, I don't know, I just want it. So that's,
that's how you'll know, right, Susan? That's the intuition that leads you to recognize, to the mirror that life can see itself in. Mm-hmm. And therefore you know that there's a knowing that is not a self-referencing, right? So life's teaching you how to do that.
Yeah, it's not question my intuition. I think that's the biggest discovery for me. When it drops in, it's not coming from nowhere. It really, just do it, whatever that thing is. So, yeah, so I'm touched just to be able to talk to you and kind of just say, I'm here, you know.
Yeah, well, do that more often or as an honor drops in, right?
Yeah, so if you say, who am I talking to? I don't know. It's like, I've lost my identity, but you're talking to somebody here. So, it's reassuring.
It's paradoxical.
So
yes, and reassuring.
Yes, it is. It's weird. It's very weird.
Yeah.
It's a strange place to be, but here. Okay, thank you so much. All right,
thanks.
Bye, Michael. Bye.
Bye. Thanks for joining us, Susan. And Ashwin and I really enjoyed that conversation and referencing life rather than ego is fabulous process. And there's that tug from ego whose identity is going away at the same time.
Yeah, and to recognize the disorientation we feel is not something wrong. It's just, it's like, I was just writing about this, right? So when we thought that we were the center of the universe and the sun revolves around us, versus suddenly realizing that we revolve around the sun really just changes the way we look at the world.
Yes.
So it's that, right? Being used to, wait a second, every belief and assumption and orientation I ever had is now no longer relevant or valid or any of those things. So, wow, this is a new, whole new world.
Yes, yes. Exciting opportunities.
Yeah.
And we're going to take a break, Ashwini, and hear from our recording and listening program, and then we'll come back and talk with more callers.
Thanks, Michael.
You're welcome.
Recording and listening is one of the most powerful tools for ending suffering. RL is based on a radical idea that rather than being lost in a conversation and conditioned mind, we can live in a conversation about what's true, what's real, what's arising in life in the moment. With recording and listening, we develop the powerful skill of directing the attention, enabling us to access the wisdom, love, and compassion that is our authentic nature. We have a 6-week virtual class to train in this amazing tool and experience its benefits. Sangha who have taken this class are saying that learning to direct the attention opens up endless possibilities and so often provides clarity and hope. Others report that finding refuge in my own voice and strengthening the awareness of the mentor is both transformative and powerful. Now is a great time to sign up with a recording and listening trainer. This class is perfect for brand new folks and old timers alike. To sign up with an individual trainer, simply email rltrainer@livingcompassion.org. Please check the website for quarterly group classes as well. Experience the joy of presence with the support of recording and listening.
Welcome back to Open Air. And Ashwini, we have more callers here.
Oh, good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Ashwini. Hi, Michael. It's Ramita in Charleston.
Hi, Ramita.
Hello. I'm having such a good time with the year-long retreat, and I wanted to talk a little about two pretty big things that I've seen recently.
Mm-hmm.
There's a tendency to want to explain it, and I just want to just let you know that I guess I've been working with attention on awareness, and we're mm-hmm. looking at attention very deeply, and it feels really, really magical. But something shifted for me, and I started looking from the perspective of awareness of attention.
Uh-huh.
And something big has shifted with that and has made it a lot more available to watch how attention is moving from thing to thing to thing and to direct it.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. So there's a shift in how you are experiencing or practicing with attention, and it's not so much on attention as the awareness of attention.
Yes, it's almost like I had been looking at attention on awareness, like that's, you know, that I need to have an attention on this large amorphous field that I think conditioning uh-huh. had a whole lot of ideas about, and uh-huh. it actually created a sense of tension, not attention, uh-huh. just tightness and
right.
that sort of
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, so if go ahead, sorry.
No, please.
Well, what I'm hearing you say is, first of all, that there was an idea of what attention on awareness is like, feels like, is practiced, right? And so it's almost like, okay, I'm going to put my attention on something, on this awareness thing. And so there's the tension of the tightness, which you didn't say this, but there's a projection of efforting, right, of how it looks. And so the shift is, yeah, so how can you be aware of what, I mean, how can you know where attention is if you're not aware of it? So if I'm already in awareness when I'm attending to anything, if I'm paying attention to where attention is, right, and redirecting it. And so that's that interesting, it's like a chicken and the egg. Can you know what the attention is doing if you're not aware of it?
Exactly. And
how
and
are you
so
aware
much...
of where your attention is if attention is not an awareness and awareness is not aware, right? Yeah.
Yes. Well, it has opened things up. I mean, the whole field is expanded and the insights and observations and, all the quotes that are part of this week's assignment have just been mm-hmm. so valuable, mm-hmm. so helpful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
if I stay with
you, go ahead, Ramita. I just dropped in to say that this conversation sounds completely nonsensical unless we've had the experience, right? That shift that you're pointing to is almost impossible to articulate, and yet it shifts the experience, right?
Yes, which is such a perfect segue to the other piece that I wanted to talk about. As I see all of these things, I'll have these insights come up. What happens is I was sitting the other morning and I caught how conditioning takes an insight and turns it into an identity. I heard the words, how am I going to describe this?
Mm-hmm.
How am I going mm-hmm. to talk about this?
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of those startling, lasting kind of, oh my gosh. And I was able to catch it, stop going there, and just stay with the insight and let it deepen.
Yeah, so watching how quickly the attention goes from attending to awareness or awareness attending to attention and off to that sense of the thought, right? How am I going to describe this or articulate it or share it? And it is really what we're talking about as identity, right? That movement into knowledge from knowing.
Yes. Yes. And yes.
I know I can talk about, go ahead, sorry.
Yes. Yes. I know this is who I am. This is how I am in the world. This is how I want you to see me, the image of myself in the world, how all of that gets, you know, just that slippery slope. And all it does is drain the energy, drain the life force, distract me. And now I feel like I found a magic key. I don't have to go there.
Yeah, you don't have to go there. You just notice it and come and redirect the attention and then see where the attention is, right?
Yes. Just, I know it's one of these things that we've been talking about forever, and I'm not new to awareness practice, but awareness practice is new for me now.
What a beautiful way of saying it. What a beautiful way of saying it. And we talk about it all the time, right? We get it when we get it and never before that. And that place of the blocks are very specific and then they dissolve very specifically. Right? And so it's that notion of, okay, well, I noticed that this is the way the block forms, right? How will I talk about this? Now, that's specifically something that you don't have to go with. And then it might show up in some other form, and then you're aware of that, and you choose not to notice that. I mean, choose not to go with that. You notice that and let go. And so that's why awareness practice is always new, right? Because we're always coming up against something we haven't seen before and seeing it.
Yes. And the ability to stay with the insight and what I'm seeing rather than the habitual distraction into conditioned mind and identity formation, it just, this is where all the juice is. This is where the curiosity and the gratitude and excitement and...
If I may, to redirect or reframe that even more specifically, right, Ramita, is it's to stay with the insight team, not the insight. It's not about what I'm seeing, but the process that is seen that's exciting, right? That is exciting. That's the aliveness. So it's not even insight to not let the insight get turned into identity. It's not the insight also becomes what's interesting, because it's the same process.
Yes, it's
and
the
it's
seeing.
What you just yes you just started us with. The shift is awareness aware of attention. And that's the awareness that is, right? That is really the process, the seeing, the looking, the inciting, the being that the attention is really on that gives us that experience.
It feels really, really big.
Big.
So I've been doing a lot of recording about it, and I really appreciate having this venue to talk and get it reflected in a way that is not that habitual downward slope.
The energy doesn't go out of it just because you're reporting about it rather than reporting from it.
Thank you very much, Ashwini.
Thanks, Amita.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Ramita. And Ashwini, I love that idea of staying in the process of inciting. And I do see the ego habit of, oh, I got an insight. Oh, let's think about that insight. Let's put it in concrete and think about it some more. And then I've lost the process of inciting.
Precisely. And, you know, Michael, that might be just that. That might be a way of being in the excitement. It just, we don't need to believe what we say. Just stay in that expression of it, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Fabulous. And we have another caller here. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
This is Laura C., Laura from San Diego.
Hey, Laura.
Hey, Laura.
Hey. So I was wanting to, so I had an kind of an awareness drop in a couple of weeks ago that I've just been sitting with and practicing with around, I can't even remember where I was listening, which morning show, you know, but is meditation, I have this love relationship with meditation, and then I forget that I love it. I get talked out of that, and I was listening to someone who was calling in on the show, and they were talking about like when they sat, they had this experience of kind of the blank wall saying like "I love you" to them, and I might be butchering what they said, but and so what I saw, and it. You could hear, like, I'm still practicing, working with this, which is why I'm calling, is there is so much, there's such this layer of, like, self-hate that I didn't really see that how much busyness in my life keeps the self-hate away. But when I'm sitting, there's this experience of, like, I don't want to sit because then I have to, like, face, like, what I'm hearing is really the self-hate, not "and I love you."
Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh, how powerful is that, right? So many levels of insight, which is, A, I'm so busy, and busyness in some ways is a powerful way of having the attention on a task, right? Everything else gets ignored, right, including sometimes the voice of self-hate. And that is sort of not a sort of sustainable way to happiness,
right?
Because, or peace, or peace of mind, because when you're not busy, it's conditional, right? That's the word I was looking for.
Yes.
So as long as my attention is occupied doing things to the point that there's no room in my life, the self-hate is at bay. But as soon as I'm on the cushion or going, or as April said, right, going while I'm sleeping, there it is. What I hear is self-hate. And that whole interaction about the wall saying "I love you" really, really brings home the fact that the reason I don't want to sit is what I'm listening to is self-hate. I don't hear the love.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's so important to see that, right, Laura, because then we know that what I want to be attending to on the cushion is my breath or love. And when the self-hate comes in, I want to redirect it, and that becomes where I do the work.
Yeah. So I made this commitment. So I'm on the Buddy Right system, and I made the commitment to sit for 20 minutes every morning, and I do actually really love that. And I was in this really beautiful rhythm of that, and now I'm not. And I haven't probably sat in the morning for, you know, I don't even know how many weeks now it's been. And, but I have it. So, but I've also doing this thing where I sit 5 minutes before I go to bed. And I just love that. And so that dropped in a while ago about something else. And I've been super consistent about that. And like almost 100%. It's just really, really fun. And so I was watching how come I can do that, but the morning sit, right? And conditioning has all these reasons why the morning sit is just not doable. And I really am seeing through that. That's actually, none of that stuff is true. It's really this experience of it seems like for 5 minutes I can stay with the breath and not go to, you know, not really let self-hate take over the experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess, you know, I was recording, listening around like, well, should I sit for 5 minutes in the morning? And then I like get all muddled. It's like, well, then is conditioning hijacking that? Like, but I really miss the morning recitation. I really love saying that. And then I just get into a conversation. So I just thought I would call in about it instead.
Well, there's so many things, right, Laura? I mean, having a conversation about anything, you just take off the table.
Yes.
Whether you could do it, why can you do it for 5 minutes before you go to bed and you can't do it for 20 minutes before you begin your day, right? We don't need to consult conditioned mind about that. And we are in this process of, we can let life inform us about it, right? Be open to being assisted. That's a different process than trying to figure it out or noodle it.
Yes.
And here's a question, right? So there, when we train with anything in practice, we're training so that we can see whatever is going on. So you committed to sitting for 20 minutes. You were able to do that for a while, and then you stopped. But we don't know why we stopped, right? And here you've had a powerful insight around, it's because all I listen to is self-hate, and why do I want to listen to that, right? So now there's an insight of, okay, so how do I train with not being talked out of my sit just because I don't want to listen to self-hate? I do have the option of not listening to self-hate and sitting on the cushion, and maybe that's what I want to train in, right? Rather than work out whether it's 20 minutes in the morning and 5 minutes in the afternoon, or 5 minutes in the morning, it's like, what did life reveal to me through this insight that I can train with? So I want to train with the wall saying I love you when I sit. Or I want to train with not listening to self-hate. Okay, for the next 1 week, 20 minutes sit in the morning, because that's where it doesn't seem to happen. And I'm not going to hold myself to any standards of whether I get talked out of it or I'm just going to see what happens if my intention and my training goal is to sit in love rather than sit in self-hate.
So I know that that's it.
You don't have to be perfect. You don't have to do it. You don't have to not forget. If you forget, you just recommit. But it may not be that, right? It's not. It just dropped in based on what you said about the wall loving you and you think to self hate. So you could be open to what drops in around what's your training goal.
Well, the reason why it feels like, well, that feels like it's it, because the moment you said it, there was really like this, it's ego's resistance. And when you reflected the piece around that, I did do it for a period of time, and there was a period of enjoyment around it. That confidence, that, you know, that adequacy that you get, that all of that experience that you get when you keep your commitments, I had that experience. And so occurs right at this moment, it's like I could make recordings around that experience, because what I want to train with is, so it's almost like ego wants to make the commitment smaller, almost to reinforce the inadequacy rather than go with what actually is that this human is adequate for.
Right. Yeah. And you could even do something radical like, I'm going to sit, and I don't have to have any experience, any kind of experience, because we're not sitting to have an experience of feeling good. I'm having an experience to see everything that I can sit with.
Right.
Because
I'm going to make
have
the
known that what you were listening to was self-hate until you sat and noticed that what you were listening to was self-hate. Now you have the option not to do that, but you didn't know that that was what was happening.
Yes. I mean, it's been a journey forever, and it wasn't until I heard that one caller say, right, sitting with love, and I just kind of was like, huh, that's not really my experience. But it wasn't actually my experience that I was sitting with hate, because it's not, the ego isn't so blatant in the sit, right, to yell at me in the sit. But there is just this experience of, like, it's so hard, it's so much fighting. And, you know, I've gotten guidance several times around letting meditation be a relationship with myself, spending time with myself. And, you know, that just seems to be where, as you talk about, where the training, right, needs, you know, needs to be from a place of unconditional love.
Yes, and the thing is, right, Laura, we fall in love. It's a process. We invest in it. We invest in what we love. And so not to expect that the process is instantaneous just because you've seen it, right? That's why we call it a practice.
Yeah.
So if you're encountering life on the cushion and, you know, you've set up a date and that hasn't happened, now there's a different approach to it. There's a different relating to it. There's a different look. What are you looking for? I mean, there's just like, okay, now the relationship is about love. It's not about hate or self-hate or ego or identity or however you want to describe it. And so then you've got to develop that relationship, right?
Yeah.
Especially with somebody who's a jealous ex who doesn't want you to do that.
Yeah, a jealous, abusive ex, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. That's very helpful.
All right. Keep us posted.
Okay. I will.
Thank you, Laura.
Thanks for joining us, Laura. I love that conversation also, Ashwini. And in the interest of time, I'm going to go straight to our next caller here.
Okay.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, can you hear me? This is Zoe from New Jersey.
Hey, Zoe.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to check in. It's been a little while, and I one of the things I'm looking at is sort of confusion, and so I've really enjoyed the show so far, and getting a lot of good stuff in there already.
Mm-hmm. So looking at confusion and getting some clarity about it.
Yeah. Well, I still feel like I'm in confusion. The thing that you just said, the most recent thing that you said, that I think I'm just noticing a process where the scrambler must be up.
Yeah. I mean, you know what we say in practice about confusion, right? It's consulting conditioned mind for answers.
Yes.
Yeah. And so just like Susan was talking about, there is the ability to, you've practiced enough to know that that's what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the scrambler is...
Go ahead. Well, say a little bit more about confusion. That's what I was trying to clarify and draw out. So the scrambler is definitely up.
Mm-hmm.
And are you confused about content? Confused about making decisions? When you say confusion, what are you saying?
So much. One of the confusion pieces is not seeing what. So I'm not seeing like what the thing that you just said that made sense was that. So obviously I'm looking to conditioned mind for clarity, and that's why I'm not getting any guidance from life.
Yes, I think that's beautifully stated, Zoe. Yeah, you're getting confusion because we're looking at conditioned mind. Clarity comes from life. I'm just looking in the wrong places.
Right, and so I'm in the confusion around how to make commitments. There's so many things that come up around, you know, the paying attention and the year long and like what to commit to. And, so there's that.
So would
confusion.
You say that the confusion is a result of using conditioned mind to make a decision around something? It's the noodling, right? Well, do I make this or do I do that, or what is the commitment and what? And so, okay, keep going.
Well, so I was going to say, I was trying to see if any of these things were connected, because there's also that process of like wanting to talk about 100,000 different things at the same, you know, all at once. And, you know, so, and I think that's related to the scattered kind of scrambling process. But, so I've been wanting to pay attention to, and wanting to really pay attention to an ego process, and not wanting to call in until I saw something about it. And there's the confusion right now for me is just how to do any of it, really, like how to even. I feel like I don't know how to practice, because when I'm, because I'm just kind of like lost in all of this.
Mm-hmm. Well, so since we're running up against the clock here,
I know.
Well, let me cut to the chase a little bit, and then we can call back and have a longer conversation, right? Because the reason to practice is to get out of conditioned mind. Not to consult conditioned mind about how to get out of conditioned mind, right? So the simplest way to practice with anything, I mean, so whenever you have a decision to make, toss a coin. It really doesn't matter what the commitment is, because in keeping the commitment, you're going to see everything that you're going to see about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so truly, the exit the confusion could be your commitment. And the way to exit, to train with exiting the confusion, could simply be pick any commitment. I want to pay attention to how many leaves there are between here and when I get to work.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're out of the confusion of consulting conditioned mind about the about what you need to be doing and how you can't practice because you don't know how to practice, or you can't see what to say, or all of that. Everything you said is really just noodling or figuring it out or in the conditioned process. And all you need to do is exit the conditioned process. So you could, whatever the content is, just make a decision. Flip a coin, pick it out of a hat, whatever comes in, right? What do I talk about? Well, the first thing that drops in. Or before the call, I put it all on pieces of paper and I pick out one and I talk about it, and I guarantee you'll get to the crux of the situation, right? Or your process or what your process is. And so the how does not have to be noodled. It can be your training structure. Your training structure is
how?
To cut through the confusion by picking one thing, whatever it is, and it doesn't matter, and attending to it. Now you're out of the confusion and you're practicing attending to at practicing attention, and because you're doing that, you'll see whatever you need to see. And once you make that commitment, the most important thing is not to listen to a conversation about whether it's the right commitment, right? Because that's just the on-ramp, or it's the bad commitment. It's not as cool as, or it doesn't address this, or whatever it is, right? It's just, that's just stepping back into consulting conditioning and confusion.
I like the hat idea. That struck a resonance. So
yes, it's happening right now, Zoe. It's happening right now, right? There, that attention is going to, okay, well, how do I take this and do it? And do I want to cut little pieces of white paper and use highlighters or whatever, right?
Oh, I love it.
What hat?
Oh, I love it. And, It brings me to my...
I can I can say that. It's because it's a universal process, right? I have the same process you have. And we all do, right? That notion of we're so trained to go up in our heads to figure stuff out, to make sure it's right, to make sure it's going to get me out of this confusion. Well, the way out of the confusion is not to confess the confusion, right? Mm-hmm. That's the clarity that gets obfuscated when we're in that conditioned thinking process. But somehow there's something to gain from thinking about it.
Well, thank you so much. I really, really appreciate it. And thank you for sending out the email about the radio show. I was one of the people who was sleepwalking around and didn't realize it was happening. And so, yeah. So thank you.
Well,
thank
call
you,
in
you.
And talk to us about paying attention.
I will.
Not confusion.
I will. Thank you.
All right.
Have a great night. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Zoe. And I think that laughter, Ashwini, is the surest sign of disidentification and a great way to end a great show.
Yeah. Thank you, Michael.
Yeah.
Go happy.
Thank you, Ashwini. Go happy.
Take care, everybody.